What's up, everyone? This is Mike Cashew, and you're listening to the Brute Strength Podcast. This week, I interview the owner of a company called Order of Man, Ryan Mickler. Ryan has dedicated his life to teaching men how to be better husbands, fathers, and human beings in general. If you've been listening to the show for a while, you know that this is a topic that I like to discuss often with as many guests as I can. And this guy has dedicated his entire life to the subject. So it's a really, really interesting interview, different than anything we've ever done. If you're a guy that just wants to be a better man, then this one's for you. If you have been a regular listener of this show for a while and haven't done so already, please put this show on pause, go leave me a quick review in iTunes, and come back. If you have a question that you want answered related to health and fitness, mindset, business, etc., please don't hesitate to call in. I absolutely love being able to connect with you guys and answer your questions, or having friends of mine that are experts help me answer your questions. So if you're interested, call into the hotline at 801-449-0503. That's 801-449-0503. Enjoy the show. What's up, everyone? This is Mike Cashew, and this is the Brute Strength Podcast. My guest today is the host of the Order of Man podcast and the Order of Man, the company. I'm really excited to do this interview. I've listened to your show for quite a while, Ryan, and I'm in the fitness industry, and I think there's this misconception that to be a man, you have to be tough. And what tough means is that you can't be vulnerable, you can't show emotion. And I think it's just a huge, it's not doing men well. And so, I've listened to you for long enough to know that you're a man of character, you embrace vulnerability, and your life is all about being a better man. All the while, you're a combat veteran, you have an epic beard, and you're what most people would consider manly. And so I'm really excited to have this conversation. So guys, my guest today, his name is Ryan Mickler. Ryan, thank you so much for making some time to do this, man.
You bet. What's going on, man? That's quite the intro. So I appreciate it. I was going to tell you one of the things I thought about. I'm just going to jump right into something, if that's okay with you.
Yep.
You had talked about a man's got to be tough, right? And you talked about this emotional side and this vulnerability. And I actually see both sides. Like, does a man have to be tough? Yes. The answer to that is yes. Can a man show vulnerability? Probably he should at some point. So I think to just maybe clarify really quick, it is really, really important that a man knows when to be tough and put that stuff aside, and when he might be more vulnerable and show those emotions, so at the end of the day, he can get the job done. That's the bottom line. Like, I got to get the job done. I've got a family to take care of, or I've got a business, or I've got my employees, or I've got my clients. And so understanding how to use both sides of this toughness versus vulnerability, I think, is very, right, very important for a man to understand.
Right. It may not be appropriate to be constantly sharing your deepest, darkest emotions at right, all times, right?
Right. Or on the flip side of that, to your point, is it's not always best to put on this persona of toughness and the egocentric things that we do, and that doesn't always serve us well either. So it's a good combination, a healthy balance of both.
Right. So what started you on this whole path? Why did you make it your life's work to help other men become better men?
Yeah, I mean, I when somebody asked me that, I go all the way back to the time I was three. I just at the end of the day, I just didn't have a role model for how a man behaved. I didn't have a permanent father figure in my life. My dad was out of the picture by the time I was 3 years old. I had some other stepfathers come into my life who were not great examples of what it meant to be a man, looking back at it now. But that's where I learned from. And I really floundered. I struggled for a long time. In high school, I always kind of felt out of place. I didn't know how the guys interacted. But fortunately, I had some good coaches. I had some good friends. I joined the military. You had mentioned that. So I learned a lot about this stuff. But I still struggled. And it really came to a head in my marriage. I just didn't know what a good man did. I just didn't know how he behaved and how he acted. And so I really struggled when it came to showing my wife the appreciation and love and admiration she deserved. I wasn't a great father at the time. And long story short, we actually ended up going through a separation. And that separation was, for anybody who's gone through a separation or even a divorce, knows that's probably the darkest time in a person's life. And it literally was the darkest time of my life. But looking back almost 10 years later, I think it's been maybe 8 or 9 years. It was the best thing that could have ever happened to me. And it was the catalyst for change. It was rock mm-hmm. bottom for me. And I realized something needed to change. And that was the catalyst. That was the start of Order of Man, although it didn't come for, you know, 7, 8 years later, where I decided that I had to start having these conversations and I still had to start talking about these things. And what's really fascinating is as I did, it was very apparent that there's a lot of men who are dealing with the same things I was dealing with. And I knew something had to be done and I threw my hat in the ring and we've been going for a couple of years now and it's been an awesome ride.
Hell yeah, man. So you had this huge catalyst to change. What were kind of the first steps in your journey in kind of changing your life?
Yeah, I think the first step is just exposing yourself to new information. And I can get really specific with what that looked like for me. But I think at the end of the day, we are exactly where we are because of the information and the culture and the background and the experiences and the belief and all the little scripts and things that not only we've been told, but we tell ourselves. And in order for you to change, if you find yourself in a situation where you're thinking, hey, I'm not satisfied with where I am. I'm not satisfied with where my marriages. I'm not satisfied with where my business is or my bank account or my health specifically for your audience. You've got to realize that you can only get so far with the information that you've been exposed to. So for me, it was a matter of putting myself in environments that would allow me to learn new things that I had not previously learned. Mm-hmm. So I would look around and I would see guys who were really, really having success with their marriages. I was looking around and I was seeing men who were having a lot of success within their business. And it was a matter of just having the balls to go up and reach out and connect with them and ask them if they would teach me some of what they knew. I started listening to CDs. There wasn't many podcasts. It was the early stages of podcasting at that point. I started reading a lot of books, and it's pretty amazing how quickly things change when, again, you expose yourself to new information.
And how does that differ to how you were before the separation? Were you just kind of going about life thinking you had it all figured out, or was it something different?
Yeah, I mean, think about our role as men specifically, and I guess this applies to women as well, but if you think about all of the different things that we do, I usually just talk in the context of men because that's what I'm doing on a daily basis, so I'm just in the habit of talking only to men.
Right.
So, but if you look at what we have to do on a daily basis, we're fathers, we're husbands, we're business owners, we're community leaders, we might have some spiritual obligations, I'm going to coach my son's first baseball game this evening. So we wear all of these different hats, and what ends up happening is we put our head down. And it's a little bit of a trap in a way, but we put our head down and we drive, and we're constantly busy and we're doing so much that we never take any time or margin or space for, number one, ourselves, and number two, the opportunity and chance to look up and see and critically analyze whether what we're doing or not is actually benefiting us and those people around us. So we get consumed, and I see hundreds, if not thousands, of men on a daily basis who are just consumed with the day-to-day grind, and they're busy, right? I mean, ask right. 100 people, and 99 of them will say they're busy, and they wear it like a badge of honor, yet it's like, okay, well, tell me how productive you are. Tell me how effective that you are or efficient that you are, and they can't answer those questions because they're not. They're just busy, yet they're not doing anything, mm-hmm. and that's how I was.
Sure, I can totally relate to that. What, did you have any early aha moments on that journey?
Number one was taking full ownership of my life. So the biggest aha moment that I had was as I was going through that separation with my wife. I remember the road that I was on. I remember the cross street that I was on. And I remember thinking to myself, man, this relationship, this marriage might legitimately be over. And what a horrible feeling that was. But I came to the conclusion that that was the reality, right? And so this thing might be over, but I'm going to go to work starting today. I'm going to go to work on myself. I'm going to take care of myself. I'm going to take care of my money, my body, everything that I think is important to me. And if I can salvage this marriage through that, great. If not, I'm going to be the best catch for the next woman to come along. And it was fascinating to have that catharsis, have that realization of taking full ownership, because what I was doing before is I was shifting all of the responsibility and blame on her. like, how could she do this? It was her fault. How could she take my one-year-old son? Why didn't she appreciate me? And so I was throwing this all back on her. And while I hear a lot of people say, well, it takes two and it's probably her responsibility as well, and there's certainly an element of truth to that, the reality is I can't do anything to control another human being. I can't do anything to control my wife. And so I went to work on myself, and the aha moment was that it is amazing to me how quickly people respond, not when you try to coerce or manipulate or change them, but when you actually just go to work on yourself, mm-hmm. people respond differently to that, and it's an incredible thing.
Isn't it amazing how my wife and I were talking about this yesterday? When you take accountability for your part, it doesn't matter who the person is. They immediately soften. And they won't always take ownership of their part immediately, but they immediately soften, and it gives you the opportunity to change something, right? Why do you think, you know, before this, why do you think you may have blamed her and you were reluctant to take ownership over your part?
Oh, it's ego. It's always ego, right? I mean, think about how we walk around as human beings. If I have to take ownership of my own faults, the things that I'm struggling with, the things that I haven't done well, then that means that I'm less or that I'm inadequate. Mm-hmm. And nobody wants to face that realization. Nobody wants to say they struggle. Nobody wants to say they don't have it figured out. And so we walk around with these inflated egos, and we walk around with these puffed out chest trying to make people believe that we have it figured out. And in a way, trying to make ourselves believe that we have it figured out.
Right.
But I have a saying, and I say humility is strength. And it truly is. The more humble that any human being can be, the stronger that person becomes, because they're not oblivious to the blind spots that they have in their life. And so for me, it's constant evaluation of my own life and being real with myself and actually getting feedback from people who are going to be real with me as well. Mm-hmm. My kids, for example, I constantly ask my kids, what am I doing as a good father? What am I not doing so well? Man, you want to get ruthlessly true with people? Ask a child what they think about what you're doing.
Wow.
And it's not always a fun process to know that you're falling short, but I want to be strong. I want to be physically strong. I want to be mentally and emotionally strong and resilient and tough. And in order to do that, I need to recognize what blind spots I have, and I can't do that on my own.
That's powerful, man. I really like that. You know, it's funny though, because we all want to have this facade that we all have it figured out, but at the end of the day, we don't really need to, we don't need to have it all figured out to be whole and to have other people love us and respect us, right?
Oh, for sure. I mean, nobody has everything figured out. I think the key is to figure out what you know and your lane, if you will, staying in your lane, mm-hmm. right? And figure out, hey, this is what I thrive at. This is what I excel at. This is what I enjoy. Here's what I know. And then doubling down on those efforts. The other stuff, what's really incredible is you can, if you're talking about a business context, for example, you can hire that stuff out. You don't need mm-hmm. to know that. If you're talking about relationships, well, that's why we have relationships. That's why I am married. That's why we've been married for 13 years, is that she's amazing at the things that I'm not great with. Patience, right. Kindness, compassion. And I'm better at some things than her, which is uplifting and motivating for her and helps her in her weak spots. This is the exact reason that there is so many of us with different experiences, so that we can bond together and be stronger when we are together.
Love it. What is, and I'm referencing the podcast that we talked about with Satyen Raja.
Yeah, that's right.
Uh-huh. On masculinity and femininity. I haven't talked a lot about sexuality in general on this podcast, but I've been interested in doing so. So, can you explain what the difference in masculinity and femininity is, and kind of how we can think about it? Like, should we be trying to bring more masculinity out, or just letting nature run its course? How do we think about that?
Yeah, this is, you're asking for a tall order here, because he does such an amazing job on mm-hmm. that. In fact, I'll just make an introduction so you can have him on your show.
Perfect.
But in the meantime, all of us, whether you're a man listening to this or a woman listening to this, have both masculine and feminine energy. And there's going to be men who are more masculine in their energies, and there's going to be men who are more feminine, and there's going to be women who have more masculine energy. Like, this is not a new concept. You can literally see it when you're interacting with men and women. Oh, this man is a little bit more feminine. This woman is a little bit more masculine, and it doesn't make them not a man or not a woman or anything like that. It just means they have different energies flowing through. So all of us have a unique percentage, I guess, for lack of a better term, energy that's coursing through us. Mm-hmm. For example, me, I tend to be more masculine. You know, I like toughness, hardness, aggression. I like working out. Even I cross the line at times, you know, when I might be taking care of my kids or something, you know, like disciplining my kids or yelling or something like mm-hmm. that, right? And so I think the key here is to recognize and understand where you fall on that sliding scale, again, for lack of a better term, so that you can use it. Again, it's about getting the job done. But I also recognize that there's moments where I can show kindness and compassion, and that I might be vulnerable, or that I might even cry, you know, and that's a big issue. Do men cry? Of course they cry. Like, we all have emotions. I don't cry as much as maybe another guy necessarily, because that's the type of energy he has, right? But the other side of this is, we naturally, I think, find partners and people to surround ourselves with that balance ourselves out, that balance the energy out. Because mm-hmm. masculine energy is not bad or good. Feminine energy is not bad or good. It just is what it is. And we need to find that balance in our lives, which is why finding other people who can balance the, for me, for example, the kindness and the compassion and the caring side out is valuable for me, because it helps me achieve that balance that I need in that, in my life.
Do you have any ways of going about finding that kind of unique percentage?
Well, that's a good question. I think we all kind of inherently know, right? If you're just a little bit conscious about it, I think mm-hmm. you kind of understand where that falls. But Satyen talks about movies, for example. Like, when you watch a movie, or you're going to pick a movie, like, how often are you watching out of 10 movies? How often are you watching a war movie, or something that's a little bit more violent or has aggression or something like that, versus something that might be a little bit softer, which I would refer to as a chick flick, right? So, and for me, it's like, I want to watch a war movie 9 out of 10 times. So it's pretty safe to say that energy is coursing through my veins. Versus somebody else who might enjoy something a little bit more of like a romantic drama or something like that. And that's a quick and easy way to find one way to find a percentage.
I love it, man.
Yeah.
I've been taught by a few people now that the masculine grows with challenge. So what do you think of that? And do you find that you challenge yourself in all areas of your life?
Yeah. So do you know who John Eldridge is? Does that name ring a bell?
It doesn't.
Okay. So he wrote a book called Wild at Heart. Sorry, it took me a second. Wild at Heart. Mm-hmm. And it's a really fascinating look at men becoming men, turning from boys into men. And he has one of my favorite quotes, and it says, "Deep in his heart, every man longs for a battle to fight, an adventure to live, and a beauty to rescue." Mm-hmm. And that, to me, epitomizes the masculine energy, right? A battle to fight. We want to fight a battle. We want to have a war. And it's not a physical war. We're not warriors, right? But it might be a war for a cause, even. Or it might just be a battle as you going into the gym every day and battling it out with the iron, whatever it may be. An adventure to live is trying to find new ways to approach life, trying to do things differently. To your point, it's the challenge that comes with life. An adventure would not be exciting if there was no challenge. In fact, it wouldn't even be an adventure. And then a beauty to rescue, right? Guys want to find the damsel in distress, right? They want to see the girl locked in the tower, and they want to slay the dragons and whoever else they need to save that beauty. That's just part of life. I think there's a big push in society today that says that's not how it should be. I don't deal in shoulds. I just deal in reality. The reality is that's how it is. So for me, yes, I want a beauty to rescue. That's my wife and that's my children. I want an adventure. One of the things that I'm taking my children to do, in fact, tomorrow, is I'm going to take them out of school in the middle of the day. And I just bought for me and my two oldest boys, a helicopter tour. So I'm going to take them and we're going to go on a helicopter tour of Zion National Park. That's our adventure.
That's awesome.
It's going to be awesome, right? And the battle for me is what I'm doing within my work. And it's a battle every day against I would say maybe more for men and becoming better men and against the complacent, lackadaisical, sedated man that we see in society today. So to answer your question really succinctly, yes, I'm striving for challenge and I thrive on that thing.
So you mentioned the term sedated man. Mm-hmm. I kind of want to go on that tangent. Why, what does that mean? And why is that and has that happened in our society?
Yeah, that's a really good point. It could be a full discussion, but check this out. Just for a second, just do a quick exercise, and it might be that you have to do this tonight or sometime. When you're at the gym or you're driving home or you're on a walk or you're in the office, just look into the eyes of the men that you're interacting with on a daily basis. Just look at that for a second. And I can tell you, and I know from experience, that most of what you see inside of those in those eyes is sedation, right? It's death. It's mediocrity. It's complacency. It's I've succumbed to what life has to offer. And part of the reason, and I think this is a push on society, is that society in general does not want men to be quote unquote masculine. Because if you look around and you see about the atrocities that have happened through thousands of years of human beings on this planet, most of it, quite honestly, happens through men. It's violence, it's aggression, it's suppression, it's tyranny, and it's all of those things. But that's not what it means to be a man. That's just kind of the masculine energy. And so manliness is about not suppressing masculinity, but controlling it in a way that's productive. Because violence and aggression and the challenge, like you talk about, is a good thing. That energy can be harnessed to create amazing change in the world. So again, society is pushing against this thought of masculinity because they don't want men to be men, right? Mm-hmm. They just want them to be sedated. The other side of this is those that are sedated, robots, drones, they do their work without questioning or bucking the system, mm-hmm. right? And if you are just doing your work, you're a lot more productive and effective to me than if you're always challenging. I've got a little puppy, for example, and he likes to push my buttons and he's trying to challenge authority right now because he wants to see where he falls in the pecking order. But at the end of the day, like, what am I trying to do? I'm trying to control that animal to help him understand and see that I'm the leader, I'm in charge, and I'm going to be assertive. But he's still trying to establish that pecking order. And so I think we've fallen into that as society as well, and a lot of guys have succumbed to that.
So how do you make sure, ensure that you don't burn out, right? You're not only expressing your masculine energy. So you talked earlier about the fact that we all have a little bit of both. How do you know when you need to express some of that feminine energy, or just how do you go about thinking about that?
Well, I think productivity is number one. And so I schedule a lot of reflection time within my day. Like, am I being effective? Am I being efficient? Am I getting the job done? And sometimes pushing too hard and driving too hard and only using the masculine energy doesn't allow you to get the job done. I'll give you a prime example. If, for example, my son falls and scrapes his knee or really hurts himself, me saying, "Get up, stop complaining, stop crying about it," really probably in some circumstances doesn't help the issue. In other circumstances, it might. Versus me, okay, what am I trying to teach my son in this moment? We were on a walk the other day, and my second son, he fell on his scooter. And what did I want? What was the outcome and the result I was looking for? Well, quite honestly, I was looking for him to get back up as fast as he could and get back on the scooter. That result, that end result, would have been the thing that I wanted to do. So would me pushing, prodding, coercing, yelling, getting in his face help me accomplish that mission? And that the answer to that was no. But would me saying, "Hey, bud," and sitting beside him saying, "I'm sorry, are you okay? Man, that looks like it hurts. I know when I've scraped my knee, it really hurts. But one thing I really have worked hard on is making sure that I get back on. It's important that we get back on." And so he did. He jumped right back on. It was no big deal. But I was able to use that compassion and that kindness and that empathy to accomplish the mission at hand, which was to get him back on a scooter. So I think first and foremost, we need to recognize what needs to be done, and is the way that I'm behaving in this moment allowing me to get this job done? I remember another example when I was in – I used to manage clothing stores, and I don't know if I was having a bad day or if I was just pissed off about something. But there was this one of the workers there. She would leave the clothes everywhere. Like, she would make a pile and a stack everywhere. And I'm young in this business, and I jumped down her throat. I said, "Why are you leaving this stuff everywhere? Like, just clean it up as you go so it doesn't make a mess for everybody else." And I really got after her, and she ended up crying. And I'll never forget that. I'm like, man, what an asshole. Like, I made her cry. I don't know what she's going through. I don't know what she's experiencing right now. But me being a hard-charging drill sergeant is not getting the job done. I need to reapproach this. And so I went to her and I said, "Hey, you know, I apologize. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have jumped down your throat. Can you tell me what's going on?" Anyways, we talked this thing out and we came to an understanding. And you know what was really fascinating is, moving forward, she never made a mess like that again, ever. Wow. Because I was able to use a different energy and a different approach to get the job done. And that's the most important thing.
That's a great story. What rituals do you have daily that most contribute to you becoming a better man?
Yeah, I mean, right up your alley, exercise is number one. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've got to exercise. You know, I go in 5-6 days a week, do my work. I get it done effectively. I get it done fast so I can get back to the rest of my day. That is huge. Any type of exercise is big for me. Another one that I do a lot is planning. Like, nobody plans. They kind of think about, what do I want to accomplish? What do I need to get done today? Okay, I'll make a task list. Cool. And then they just kind of check through it. But I'm talking about, like, very specific planning that I go through every single morning. What do I want to accomplish in my relationships? What do I want to accomplish with my body? What do I want to accomplish in business? All of these things. And I'm listing this stuff out every single day. I'm prioritizing my task list. I'm going through, because that's critical that we do that. See, most guys and gals, what they'll do is they'll wake up and they'll just drive, like, go, 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 right, all day long. And again, we come back to that thing I was talking about earlier, where it's like, cool, you're busy, but what did you actually get done? What did you actually accomplish? Are you moving the needle towards where you want to go, or are you just spinning your wheels, mm-hmm, right? And so that planning process is, yes, it takes time, right? You're talking about 30, 45 minutes per day to do a planning session. But I found that if I take 30 to 45 minutes every single day and I plan that out, those remaining hours are that much more effective, because I know exactly how every minute's going to be spent throughout the day.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually a very simple concept. Like, if you go for a drive in a car, you could spend all day driving and end up somewhere you didn't really want to go, right?
Yeah, but
you could,
sure,
still spend all day driving, rather than getting a very, you know, figuring out exactly where you want to go, the perfect spot, picking out the best route that's not going to hit tolls or a bunch of traffic. And, you know, you spend 30 minutes doing that and then you go straight there.
Right.
And then you get, right, there and you have time to do other shit.
Exactly. Yep. Yep. The name of the game is efficiency and effectiveness, not just spinning your wheels like a hamster on a wheel.
Right. Is there anything else in your daily routine that really contributes to your success?
Yeah, one of the things is I like to just pause once in a while throughout the day for reflection, because, and this comes back to our same conversation we're having now, is we get so busy and we get so, like, fast. Like, we're like, our, you know, like the kid's legs are moving so fast and he ends up tripping over himself. Well, that's what we do, right? We get so busy and so fast with our day, and then we look up and it's like, oh, what did I get done? The best way to do this is to just recalibrate. So maybe every couple of hours, just take a pause, reset. I work in my home. So one of the things I'll do every couple of hours is I'll literally just go upstairs, I'll go outside, and I'll play with my dog for about 15 minutes. And again, some people say, oh, I don't have time for that, I'm too busy. Gosh, if you don't have time for that, then you are too busy and you're not being as effective as you can. Mm-hmm. But this also gives me the opportunity to say, okay, what did I accomplish? Like, what did I get done this morning? Okay, I had this interview and I did this and I put this together and I made a couple of sales. I made a couple of calls. I connected with these people. That was all good. Okay, what didn't I do very well this morning? Well, I didn't get that one blog post written or that one podcast edited that I needed to. And, oh man, that's coming out tomorrow. I need to make sure I tweak this and adjust that. So it just gives you an opportunity to, like, recalibrate throughout the day and then reprioritize and then reengage in the day the best way moving forward.
Just becoming present, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, for sure. Great point. Yeah. Good word too. Yeah.
Since starting on this journey, what are the biggest things that you've stopped doing?
Whew, that's a good question. I've stopped trying to do two things at once. Because I think what ends up happening is we get so busy and we're trying to do multiple things. And it's like, okay, I got to be a dad and I got to be a husband and I got to go be this baseball coach and I got to be this business owner. And one of the things that I've really been conscious about lately is establishing boundaries. And the boundaries that I and my children and my wife know the boundaries, and the boundaries that I have in place between when are my working hours and when am I busy doing this versus, hey, when I'm done, I'm going to be fully present and engaged with you. I'm not going to be on my phone, although I do slip on that. I'm not going to be on my phone. I'm going to be here. I'm going to be available and I'm going to be present with you. So I've really tried to create some boundaries in my life so I'm not allowing these other people's schedule to dictate how I operate my life. Because it would be very easy for me, especially in my business and you too. I mean, we're in this similar field here, is for other people to dictate your schedule. I went to a meeting one day last week, and one of my friends, he's a real estate agent. One of his goals, he said, I just want to be the most available real estate agent that my clients could have, which means that if they called at 2:30 in the morning, I would want to be there for them. And I thought to myself, dude, that's not right. You know, like that's
sustainable.
No, it's not sustainable and it's miserable. It's like, dude, set some boundaries. Mm-hmm. Like your clients know. And if they don't know, then why would you want them to be clients? So I had a guy reach out to me. I think this was last week sometime. And he said, hey, can you do a podcast at 7:00? And I said, dude, I'm sorry. I'd love to do a podcast. If you can make it work between 8 and 5, let's do it. But I don't do podcasts after 6 or whatever I said, after 5. Mm-hmm. Because that's my family time and that's the boundary that I've established. So I'm not going to let things get in the way of that.
I'm the exact same way, man. And we have a lot of conversations, as silly as it may sound, we have a lot of conversations about the phone, because the phone is a source of so many distractions. And so we've set up some things like no phones in the bedroom ever. No phones until we've both gone through our whole like morning ritual. No phones at the dinner table. And again, like it may sound like just too simple to be useful, but it has made us so much more present with one another, my wife and I, which has been amazing for our relationship. And it goes for anyone that you're trying to interact with, just putting the phone on airplane mode or leaving it in a room or leaving it in the car. It can be really amazing.
Yeah, I love it, man. That's powerful stuff for sure.
What is your personal relationship like with failure? And was there ever a time where you were, maybe paralyzed by the fear of failure? And if so, how did you overcome it?
Yeah, you know, failure's never been a real issue for me. Maybe I'm too dumb or stupid to really like worry too much about it. Mm-hmm. But like, I've never had a problem like trying. So to answer your question about relationship with failure, the failure in my mind would be not trying. Mm-hmm. So if I have an idea, and this is a little bit of faith, and I don't necessarily want to get into a spiritual conversation, but if I have an idea or a thought or an inspiration, I have a moral obligation to act on that thought. Anything less than acting it out would be insulting to, in my belief, the man and the my creator. That's why we have these inspirations. That's why we have these ideas. That's why we're on this planet, is to help other people and to implement ideas and execute on our thoughts and inspirations. And so the failure to me is having an idea and then dying with it still inside you. I'm completely okay with falling short. I'm okay with looking like a fool. I'm okay with even ridicule to a degree, because I know that, man, at least I'm up here swinging the bat and right. You're in the stands wishing that you were, but because you're not courageous enough, you ridicule other people. So I like failure. It means that I'm trying new things, and it means that I'm pushing myself, and it means that I'm going above and beyond what I previously thought I could do.
Mm-hmm. I like that, the using failure as kind of a measure for how courageous you're being, because if you're really taking big risks, you're bound to fail, right? You're bound to make mistakes and have these and really they're not failures, they're mistakes, right?
Right.
But I like using that as a gauge for courage. That's awesome.
Well, and the other thing too is you got to be careful on the other side of this, because like the goal isn't to fail, right?
And so
some people might hear that and think, oh, okay, I just got to go out there and fail a bunch. No, I want to do it perfectly. Like I want to execute flawlessly. I want to make a ton of money. I want to get in the best health possible. I want to connect with my wife and my kids. I want a big bank account. Like I want all of that stuff and I want to do it right. But I'm okay with not getting it right, knowing that this is a process. The other side of this is, how long have you planted your flag? What I see is I see a lot of people out there who aren't willing to plant their flag and really say, this is who I am. Mm-hmm. For example, in starting a business, they'll say, oh, I kind of want to start this thing that I kind of had an idea about one time that I thought maybe would be kind of cool to make some extra money. It's like, no, like plant your flag. Like, are you going to do it? Or are you not? Because that wish-washy attitude is not going to achieve any results. Mm-hmm. And so I know that I'm in this thing for the long haul. And because I know that I'm in this thing for the long haul, I've literally planted my flag. I am okay with messing up, knowing that I can just adapt and I can tweak and I can change and say, oh, that didn't work. Stop. Let's go this direction. Oh, that didn't work. Let's evaluate this, because I know I'm going to be here forever.
Right. So you're more bought in. There's no kind of escape route.
No. Why would you give yourself an out? Like, right. This is not like a, here's the interesting thing. This is not a life or death situation. I mean, barring a catastrophe or an illness or an injury or even death, like most of what we experience is just going to strengthen us. Mm-hmm. And it's just going to give us a new perspective for the way that we approach life. So embrace it rather than run away from it.
Couldn't agree more, man. So I want to talk about fitness for a second. I saw this article yesterday my dad sent, and it was about something called spornosexuals. And, okay. And the definition is, yeah, it's kind of like, it talked a lot about people in the male physique industry, right? Like the competitive physique industry.
Yeah.
And it's basically talking about this group of people that try to make very certain muscles stand out, and they want to look groomed all the time and have nice hair, and they are always dressed up in nice clothing. And which I thought is very interesting. I'm curious, how do you think about your physical fitness and your body, and what is important to you in terms of being a man?
Okay, so I love this question, man. This is probably one of my favorite questions I've ever been asked on all the podcasts I've been on. The reason that this is so important is because it's very, very easy, especially for guys, you talk about the masculine energy, for us to get consumed and obsessed with something that could potentially even be healthy, like health and fitness and nutrition and sleep and all the things that you're talking about. Same thing with style and fashion. I've seen guys that care so much about their appearance that they're no longer effective in other areas of their life. Mm-hmm. And that is the point. That is the point where it's gone too far. For me, when you talk about what is my goal of health and fitness, it's practicality. Like, I don't care that I can lift or deadlift 450 pounds. Like, that doesn't matter to me. What I do care about is that if I was in a car accident and my wife was trapped under the car hood, that I could lift the car hood up off of her.
Mm-hmm.
Or that if I was in a disaster or an emergency, that I could run for a couple of miles without losing my breath. It's not the 8-minute mile. I could care less about that. That's just a metric for my health, which is the practical application of that in my own life. Same thing when it comes to the way that I look. You know, I do want to look good. I want to maintain the beard. I want to have my hair done. I want to wear a nice clothes. Like, I want to look good. Why? So I have people's attention, and I have their respect, and I have their admiration, and I have their attention. It's not just so I can peacock and strut around without having any practical application of this.
Right.
And I think that's where a lot of guys go wrong. It's like, cool, you look awesome. Like, you look great, but let's go run on the beach for, you know, an hour. Can you do that? No. Okay, well, then it doesn't really matter, right? Mm-hmm. So I lean more towards practical application. And if I look good in the process, cool. That's nice.
Right. So it's not a... it's not bad to care about how you look, but when it gets in the way of you know, what is most important to you, right? Like family and protecting others and being a good friend and good person in general, then that's the point where, maybe you need to take a step back and, you know, reorganize your priorities.
Right. Right. And it's hard to say, like, I don't want to beat anybody up who might, you know, do that necessarily. I'm just wondering if you probably ought to find maybe a deeper purpose to life beyond, hey, I just want to look good.
Mm-hmm. Love that answer, man. Thank you.
Yeah,
you
bet.
I got a couple questions about relationships and then fatherhood. So,
right on, man.
First off, what is your measure of being a good partner? How do you know when you're truly being a good partner?
So I can't define that. And the reason I can't define that is because it's not up to me. Like, I can't say, well, I'm being a good partner.
Right.
Don't you know that, honey?
Right.
Like, she gets to define that. Right. And so what would she say? It would be time. It would be attention. It would be presence. It would be doing my job as a provider. It would be doing my job as a father. All of those things she would say. Now, if I were to say, well, I think I need to be doing this, and I think, and she doesn't appreciate me because of this. It's like, you don't get to decide what a good partner is. She gets to decide. So, yeah. So one of the things that my wife and I do all the time is we will do, for lack of a better term, we just do like an inventory. We just do a meeting each and every week. Like, how am I doing? Where am I doing well? Where am I struggling? How can I improve? How can I make this between us work better? And almost 13 years into our marriage, we're still doing this because it's important that I continue to get better. And it's important to her that she continues to get better. But again, it has to be defined just like her. She can't define it for her. Like, I get to decide what a good partner is, and she can decide if she wants to be that or not, quite
right,
honestly.
Right. You know, it's funny. It's funny that you just said that. My wife and I, we've heard a similar thing about the inventory in a couple different places. And we did it one time and we said, we're going to go on a walk every Sunday and this is what we're going to do. And we did it that one time and we haven't done it since. But
I know, man.
This is a great reminder. I know how important that is. So
isn't it crazy? Like, we do that all the time. I do it too. Like, I'm like, oh, I'm going to try this thing. And I do it. I'm like, that was awesome. I love doing that. Exactly. And it's like, but I'm not going to do it again. Yeah, it's just because life, man. It's just life's busy, and yeah, I get that. I understand that.
Yep. What other rituals in your relationship do you think most contribute to your success?
Breakfast and dinner together.
Okay.
I mean, that's it, man. It's just like, and it's a little different dynamic. I mean, I know some of the people listening probably do have kids. We've got 4 kids. And so, it's hard for my wife and I to get any alone time. And that's probably going to be the case for the next 17 years. And we've just accepted that. Mm-hmm. So, we do carve out time, of course, to make just for ourselves. But right. At the end of the day, like, the relationship that we have is really at this point in our lives centered around our children,
right,
and making sure that they're getting what they need from us. Which means that every morning we have breakfast together, unless I'm traveling or something like that, or they have an early morning recital or whatever it may be. And dinner as well. We had dinner out last night. It was my birthday yesterday. So we had dinner out, but the night before we sat down around the table and we just said, okay, name one thing about every person at the table that you appreciate about them. Mm-hmm. Name one thing. And we went around. So we did that. And then the second time we went around is one thing that you're thankful for. And we did that. And then we went around again and said one thing that you're going to improve upon this week. And so it's really cool to have these just cool conversations with your kids and like see what's important to them and see what's important to your spouse. And it's amazing. Like, if you ask people, like, they don't eat at the table anymore.
Right.
They don't eat together. They eat out all the time. They don't eat together. They eat alone. They're always on their phone or their device. And it's like, no wonder you don't have a connection with anybody. You don't find ways to connect with them.
Right. Do you ever, and I don't know because I don't have kids yet, but do either of you feel kind of neglected? Like, you're spending so much time focusing on your kids and you're being present together with the kids. Do you ever feel neglected by your partner? And if so, what do you do about that?
Yeah. I mean, the answer is yes, of course. I've talked to my wife about that. She's talked to me about that. And that's just kind of part of the deal, but it doesn't mean it needs to be that way. It just leaving those lines of communication open and in a way giving each other permission to have those types of conversations. Because if you have a closed relationship and you never converse, it's going to be very difficult for your wife to say, I feel neglected. Instead, what's going to happen is she's going to get bitter and she's going to get resentful. And then you're going to have these little wedges in your relationship, which could potentially turn into separations and divorces over long and sustained periods of time. So those opportunities to constantly have open dialogue and open communication, and then allowing each other to be truthful without passing judgment. So if my wife says something, it's I have to refrain from even offering help right away or passing judgment, and just accept it for what she's saying. Because if I do that, it basically gives her permission to be more truthful with me moving forward. So when she is feeling neglected, she's like, oh, I can tell Ryan this and he's not going to be an asshole about it. He's going to be supportive of it and he's going to try to figure out how we can make this better. And vice versa. The same goes for me to her. So I think the best thing that you can do is, again, keep those lines of communication open, give each other permission to have those types of conversations. And then when you recognize or hear your partner saying, I feel neglected, okay, cool. What can we do? Let's go out on a date. And I think part of that too is how you set up your week and how you set up your month and the things that you want to accomplish. My wife and I have a weekly date night set up. Like, we know that's what we're going to do. So it becomes more difficult to fall into the pattern of neglecting each other for the kids. And that's the trap, is like, hon, I'm trying to take care of the kids, which is good. Like, that's a good thing. There's nothing wrong with that. Just like there's nothing wrong with that guy going into the gym. But if you're doing it at the expense of your other obligations and priorities, it becomes a problem.
Right. So kind of along that same vein, how do you personally deal with this? You have a conversation, like a very vulnerable topic to you, or it's just a, you know, going into this conversation, it's going to be very uncomfortable. How do you approach that kind of situation?
Are you talking about specifically in a conversation, or?
You have to bring something up to your wife.
Okay. All right. And I know it's going to be difficult.
Yes.
Okay. I'll just do it.
Okay.
That's the point, right? Like the real conversations are never fun to have.
Right.
Like the one about, I don't know, like the latest Game of Thrones is like easy to have and it's kind of a fun conversation, but it doesn't actually enhance your relationship. It's just like going to the gym, you know, like you could go to the gym and you could do some like deadlifts with just the bar, I guess, but is that really going to help you? No. You got to put resistance on there, right? So you've got to put the plates on there and you've got to do the deadlifts. You got to do them for reps or weight or whatever you're trying to accomplish. And you know, like you go into it, you go to the gym knowing that you're going to kick your ass, right? And yet you still do it because you know it's good for you.
Right.
It's the same thing with conversations. Like if you're feeling uneasy or uncomfortable about the conversation you have that you're about to have, that's probably a pretty good indicator that this would be a good conversation to have. And this would actually help you progress in your relationship rather than just maintain the surface level bullshit that we constantly, can we swear? I'm sorry, I'm swearing on here. I don't know if we can swear on the podcast.
Oh, you can absolutely swear
okay.
on here.
Just making sure.
Yeah.
I'm just making sure, man. I just didn't want to. So
yeah, honestly, anyways, I've been personally trying to dial it down a little bit, but every single one of the shows has a little E by it. So I'm getting better, but yes.
I'm probably pretty mild, then it sounds like.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Yeah, just do it. I mean, just do it. It's supposed to be hard. Hard, you know, the difficult stuff, the stuff that's actually going to push you. Yeah, it's going to be hard. And
absolutely.
Just do it anyways. And you'll get better at it too, right?
Yep.
Like you won't if you continue to keep those dialogues open and you have those difficult conversations and you do it over and over and over and over again, it's going to get easier.
Right.
Because you're just better at it.
Right. In my experience, the fear, I feel the fear the same, but I just jump in quicker, right? I'm not like tippy-toeing around it for as long. I jump into it faster and faster.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And you give yourself less time to talk yourself out of it when you do it that
right,
way.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, hey, I know you only have a few more minutes. So, a couple questions about fatherhood. One, you didn't grow up with a strong father figure. So how did you go about learning to be a great father?
Oh yeah. So man, that's a really good question. Trial and error, number one. I mean, it, at the end of the day, like all your kids are different. They respond differently. it's a challenge, you know, and just when you think you have it figured out, something happens and you're like, oh, don't have this figured out. So mm-hmm. It is a trial and error process. The other side of it too is just like somebody might be listening to your podcast or my podcast or reading a book about self-help or reading a book about starting a business. I immerse myself in the world of being a father. Right. Just a couple of weeks ago, I was in Austin and it was a father's retreat. So I spent three and a half days in Austin learning how to be a better dad.
Wow.
Yeah, I listened to fatherhood podcasts. I read books on fatherhood because it's important to me. And I can only be as good as the information I've been exposed to. So it's my responsibility to expose myself to new information that will allow me to get better at whatever I'm trying to improve upon, in this case, being a better father.
I think that is amazing. I may be completely off base with this, but I assume that a lot of people, they read enough so that they feel like they have a handle on babies, right? When the baby is born.
Sure.
But I've literally never seen anyone that I look up to or any of my male role models reading or you know, getting further education on fatherhood after that phase, you know what I mean? But there probably are so many great resources out there now. Oh. So that's awesome.
Yeah, there's tons. It's incredible. I mean, it is incredible to me the amount of information that we have access to. Mm-hmm. You could give me a book recommendation and I can literally start reading that thing in the next 30 seconds. And it's unfortunate that we just don't tap into it as much as we could, because it's all out there. We just need to seek after it.
Right. A theme that keeps coming up with you is that you seem fully engaged. Like everything that you're committed to, you seem fully engaged in, and especially in the learning process, which is really, really cool.
Well, I appreciate that. But to the other side of that is I also know what to say no to. Mm-hmm. Because if I was doing too much, there's no way for me to be engaged in the things that are actually meaningful to me.
Right.
So this comes back to the planning process. Some of the other things that we've already talked about, like getting crystal clear with what you want out of your life, allows you to say yes to the opportunities that are going to be in your benefit. For example, even coming on this podcast, right? I get so many requests to come on shows. I know what to say yes to, and I know what to say no to. And I might mess up here and there, but at the end of the day, like I'd rather say no first, because that keeps my priorities and the time available to keep those things where they need to be, right at the top of my list.
Right. It creates more space and more time to do the things that you love and that are very important to you.
Exactly. Yep. That's exactly right.
Awesome, man. So I had one more, but I want to get you out of here on time.
Fire away, man. I got a couple
sure?
minutes.
Okay.
Fire that last question.
So telling your kids what to do versus leading by example. I know leading by example is the trump card, but how important is each of these?
So I'm actually going to throw option C in there, letting your children lead.
Oh.
And what I mean by, like, we think as fathers or mothers that we always have to have the answer and we need to guide and direct them. I think that it's not our job always to do that. In certain cases it is, but not always. I look at my job as a father is to render myself obsolete. And what I mean by that is I'm in the business of raising adults that are fully capable, self-reliant. Not that I won't always be there. I certainly will. But I don't want to be needed. I want to be wanted. Right. Mm-hmm. And so in order to do that, I need to give my children just enough rope to hang themselves with, if you will, in a controlled environment where they're not going to injure or hurt or damage themselves. And so I look for opportunities for my children to lead. I'll give you a small example. If my son and I, for example, are out on a hike and he says, Dad, where should we go? Like, I'll follow you. I'm like, no, I'm going to follow you. Like, you tell me where you need to go. Mm-hmm. And we've done this before, and he'll lead on this trail and we'll come to the fork in the road and he'll turn around and say, Dad, where should I go? And I'm like, I don't know. You're leading. So I'm following you. Where do you want to go? He's like, let's go left. I'm like, cool. Let's go left. And we go left and we come to this dead end. And he's like, Dad, it's a dead end. I'm like, okay, what do we do? He's like, I guess we can go back to the fork in the road and go right. Cool. Let's do that. I knew it was a dead end, but if I told him, I would rob him of the learning opportunity that there was for him to see that this was a dead end and we need to make a different choice moving forward.
Right.
So as much as you can give your children opportunities to lead, I think that's first and foremost. And that comes, of course, as they get older. But yeah, obviously being an example, I think, is even more critical than even the things that you're saying to your kids.
Right. Oh, that's such a cool perspective, man. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you bet.
Is there anything else you want to leave the listeners with?
No, you know, I just, gosh, take action. I mean, if anybody ever asks if I have any last words or anything like that, it would be just to take action. Like, I've seen so many people out there with different ideas and thoughts and visions for the future and all the things that they want to accomplish. And it's very seldom that you meet a person who's actually willing to put their money where their mouth is, mm-hmm. and who's willing to push past the fear like we talked about, do the plan like we talked about, and then just execute, like just get after it and do that work so that you can experience that result. I had a gentleman over here, we're doing some landscaping in the backyard, and he was dropping off some panel fencing, and we got talking for a minute, and he says, you know, 17 years ago, I was telling myself I wanted to get out of the trucking business, and here I am 17 years later, and I'm still driving truck. And he's like, I don't know what happened to that 17 years. And I thought to myself, and I had this conversation with my wife, it's like, we all have these little flashes of inspiration. And he had that random flash of inspiration 17 years ago. And unfortunately, he chose to A, not do anything about it, or B, make some sort of excuse. And this doesn't speak anything about him as a person. He's probably a great person. But at the end of the day, he probably did make some sort of an excuse as to why he can't pursue something else. And 17 years later, here he is doing the thing that he never wanted to do in the first place. Mm-hmm. So you've got to change. You've got to act. You've got to be bold and make some decisions and take some action if you want something different out of your life.
Love it, man. Where can people follow you on social media?
Yeah. So on social media, Facebook is where I spend most of my time. I guess Facebook and Instagram, both at Order of Man. We've got a really cool Facebook group. I think we just hit 25,000 men wow. inside of our Facebook group today. Yeah. Really cool stuff. Are you part of that group?
I am not, but I'm about
to be. Oh, we need to get you there. Yeah. It's, yeah. If you go to facebook.com/groups/Order of Man, that you'll just request access. And then our headquarters, orderofman.com, has everything else that we've got going on.
Awesome, man. In just a few sentences, what is Order of Man and who is it good for?
Yeah, so Order of Man is a society, a brotherhood, an organization, if you will, of men that want to be better men. They want to lead in their families, their businesses, their communities. So we talk about health. We talk about taking care of ourselves. We talk about business, anything that's important to men. And that's our goal. And so we've seen a lot of guys, and I've been honored to be a small part of some of these guys' journeys that are getting raises, getting promotions, saving their marriages, reconnecting with their kids, losing 50 pounds. I mean, you name it, it's happening. And it's pretty cool to be just, again, a small part of what it is we're doing.
Hell yeah, man. Guys, if you haven't already, please check out Ryan's podcast, Order of Man, as well as the blog. They have some of this world's just top thought leaders, people that I have really looked up to for years, and he's having amazing conversations with them. It's all free. He also has, I think you have a pretty in-depth mastermind group that
yeah.
goes into all of the stuff that you were just talking about. So spend a little time going through his site. Listen to that podcast. It's phenomenal. Ryan, thanks again for giving up so much of your time, man. This has been phenomenal.
Hey, I appreciate it, brother. Thanks for having me on.
All right, man. Take care.